Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Chase Thompson.
And I'm Ralph Enough, and we're back again with fan favorite Southern Mississippi son, Chase Thompson. Were you born in Southern Mississippi, or you just live there now?
No, we just live there now. That's where my wife's from. I was a military brat, so we moved all over. But that's where we ended up. She was from here, got a job down here.
We're very excited to have you on, Chase. You had a great show topic. This was something that you were thinking about and obviously kind of festered up during the Herd Army review that you did, where you gave a story of your Herd Army. And it was very unique. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a Herd Army, I'm a bunch of werewolves. You had a very interesting take, including like the geography of where they were located was different than you would expect.
On the Herd Army review I did, yeah, it was a story of where I thought the Herd could go as a faction in Kings of War to kind of just differentiate them a little bit from yet another Green Ladies, you know, kind of supporters, you know, it would be a way they could be a little different and stuff. My actual army lore that we're going to go through today in the episode is different just because that's not what's happening with the Herd right now. It'd be a good episode. I'm really looking forward to getting dived in.
And we should mention that there was a timely post from our favorite Bill Hupp. He put a post about paratext, which, you know, I won't paraphrase it. I'll let you go and check it out. But it's all the accoutrements to go with the background of the game that kind of make you invest, right? Things like maps and stuff. So great thread that just kicked off this morning. And I highly recommend it. If you haven't already looked at that thread, go over there and engage in that discussion.
Yeah, no, I saw it about 5 minutes before we hopped on to start recording. I saw that you tagged me in it. Did a quick read through and just, yeah, as I laughed because, yeah, a couple things we're going to cover today in the episode.
While the army lore is super exciting, they want to hear your impression of the Countercharge Mantic Army Challenge. Did you see the Facebook page first or the video first?
When you sent me the video link in Facebook Messenger, and I've been waiting for the recap at the end. I was really excited to see who won all the awards, and man, there were so many good armies, so many good models painted. It was one of those things I felt like every month I'd post my updates and then just spend like an hour sifting through everybody's stuff. And every month it was like another wow moment of seeing, you know, a new unit based a certain way or painted just to look immaculate. I mean, it was a great challenge that you guys had going on.
And when you got to that last bit of the video.
Yeah. The final thing was the major award, which was just essentially a random numbers generator decided who got the major award. And you guys are spinning it. And, you know, yeah, it landed on me. And I was just, oh, my, holy crap. You know, I'm used to, I feel like most people, right, they don't win random stuff like that a lot. That was pretty cool. That was a really cool moment. I just got so excited. I, of course, when you first announced what the prize was going to be, I came up with some basic ideas of what I was thinking if I, you know, happened to win and all that stuff. And then the video ended and I'm just sitting there starting to spiral. I just pulled my notebook out. I'm a little bit old school pen and paper guy. I just started writing stuff down, you know, different ideas of what I was thinking. But really excited to sit down with you at some point and talk about that and see what we can get worked out.
Yeah, we'll do that right after Adepticon. And so that gives you a few weeks to think about the theme. Essentially, that first session, what we'll do is we'll cover a lot of topics and you'll answer a lot of questions, you know, like playability, you know, how functional you want the stuff, how flexible you want it, how bespoke you want it, how thematic, artistic. Yeah, there's lots of questions I've got. So just be thinking about that. And, you know, the big thing, too, I always tell people is where you start is find some inspiration, whether that's a movie, your favorite gaming table, right? If you said, oh, I saw this table at Lone Wolf or at Blue City Brawl, that gives me a jumping off point. Like, you got your homework cut out for you because the sky's the limit.
Well, I'm looking forward to it for sure. I think that's going to be a lot of fun sitting down and working out how we're going to do all that.
Hobby updates, what do you got?
Lately, Kings of War wise, I've been putting together some the first of my Abyssal Dwarf army that I'm going to be starting, really truly starting later this year. At my job, I work, it's possible, you know, we have 24/7 shifts. So when I work night shift, it can be pretty slow. So sometimes I'll just bring models, or, you know, if I'm working from home, I'll just sit here and assemble models while it's real slow. So last week I assembled a bunch of Abyssal Dwarf Black Souls and Immortal Guard that'll be getting painted up later this year. Outside of Kings of War, I got some buddies at work who collect 40K models. None of them actually play 40K, but they really love the models and painting them and everything. And so I was laughing a little bit because they kind of got one of our other coworkers sucked into the lore of 40K, and he loved the orc model range, so he started buying models. And then after a couple days, I was like, we were talking about it, and I kind of laughed about something, and he was asking me a question, and I was like, well, they don't play. He was like, well, what do you mean they don't play? I said, well, yeah, they don't play 40K. He was like, oh, God, what what am I buying all this stuff for, you know? So I pulled out Stargrave, which is a rule book I've had for a while. And I really, really loved the Frostgrave games that they did, and hadn't tried Stargrave yet. So a couple weeks ago, I brought all my Firefight models and made up a bunch of different crews out of them. And we had like a 7 or 8 player Stargrave game going. So I've been doing some terrain for that through Mantic's terrain crate crazy box I got last year.
On my end, Adepticon is right around the corner. And maybe by the time you're hearing this, Adepticon will have come and gone. But so it was just really getting out the army. And I didn't have a lot of units to do for Adepticon. I just had another Phoenix and a Mage. But then obviously I hadn't used that display board since I added a lot of infantry. You got to put everything on the board and maybe spruce it up by adding a little bit of trees here, some rocks there, just to tie things in. And that's the real rub of when you have a display board that is very specific, where you have units that slot into buildings. Well, what do you do when you don't take those units?
How do you switch up your list and still make it fit, right?
Exactly. So the one particular thing is I have one Rhino Cav in the list, but the board was built for two. So, you know, I've had to kind of hide the fact that the second Rhino unit, which has the front of one of the buildings, is missing. I think I was able to do it effectively. I'm excited about Adepticon. And
for the doubles event, is your partner's stuff based the same? Is that going to go on your display board as well?
Jeremy's Basilean, and it has like a Greek Mediterranean theme. So I actually think it'll work.
Oh, yeah.
It's maybe a little bit more grayish, a little more, you know, it's a little less sandy, but I think it'll still work.
Yours is based like it's kind of edge of the Nile, sort of desert, but it's starting to get into like an oasis area kind of.
Yeah, it is a desert theme, but then there is a lot more palm trees. Is it a mirage? No, it's just a salamander outpost in the middle of nowhere. I'm excited about that. Well, let's take a quick commercial break. On the other side, we'll jump into the main topic, your army lore. We'll be right back.
This is Skullface.
I'm the Great Khan.
And this is Rico Ratasquico.
And we're the War Kings, and you're listening to Counter Charge.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back to Counter Charge. And one of the things we're going to do today is we're going to share our lore that we've created for our armies. But before we get there, Chase, you had some questions for discussion that kind of maybe would build us up to that culmination of sharing the lore that we've created. So you want to kick us off with the first question?
Yeah. So first one was just real simple. Like, how do you come up with it? Is it something where you sit down and intentionally go, you know what, today I'm going to sit here and just kind of brainstorm out a lore for my army? Or, you know, in a lot of cases, I feel like for some people, it just kind of starts, you know, naturally. So for me, a lot of the times when I start painting, you're sitting there for hours, usually listening to Rob drone on and on in a podcast he's made or watching a battle report or something like that. And so my mind just starts to think like, you know, hey, this model I've been painting for hours. Who is he? Especially the heroes and stuff for me. It's like, who is he? What are his goals? What's he doing? So sometimes it happens like that. Other times I've sat down and tried to be a little bit more intentional with it. And then my herd army lore that I came up with actually all stemmed from a single piece of terrain, cheap 3D print terrain I bought on Amazon, because I wanted my terrain on the table to represent the army just a little bit better. I had forests and stuff like that, but most of it was like buildings and wheat fields for flat, difficult terrain, stuff like that. So I bought this temple, this 3D printed temple for some terrain, and that just was the total catalyst for my entire herd army lore that I have.
Is the lore intentional? For me, it's always intentional. It's always organic in the sense that the lore doesn't usually come first. Usually it's the army or the model or the aesthetic first, or maybe even the theme first. And then from that, generates the lore. And Bill's post today about paratext, I mean, for me, you know, he brought up a great example, which is maps. Maps are always a great jumping off point to everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, specifically for my Kingdoms of Half-Men, it started with, you know, I met Kawe from Westphalia Miniatures. He had just like an extraordinary collection of halfling miniatures. Mm-hmm. Wow. They were actually developed with an eye towards a Kingdoms of Men army, right? So that was the original intent. So I was like, well, geez, this is awesome, right? And the models are amazing. They're halflings. And the distinction is they're not fat and round with big feet. They look like little humans. No. That's really what they look like, you know, little short guys.
And they're a serious army as well. They don't have pots on their heads and they're not holding pot lids. It's real arms and armor that they're wearing, and they're going into battle. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, pikes, spears, crossbows, swords and shield, you know, the like. I saw this range. I backed the first, I mean, he's had over the years, 3 or 4 Kickstarters with it, and I backed them all. And what I liked about it was, at least at first, you know, it was all one sculptor. You know, later on, they got Paul Hicks involved. I just love the models. As I was thinking about, like, well, yeah, Kingdoms of Men, that's a really flexible army. I didn't know it was any good. And I should also mention, it's important to give people a frame of reference. We're talking about a time when there was no halfling list. That wasn't a thing back then.
I'd backed their second Kickstarter for all my halflings because Vordia was my first army.
Makes perfect sense, yeah.
I flip-flopped on who to play until I found the Westphalia miniatures for my halfling part of my army, and then I just you know, that said it. Okay, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I guess I was maybe a year and a half or 2 years into the army before I actually heard the rumor that, oh, there might be a halfling army coming. But at that point, I was fully committed to the Kingdoms of Half-Men. So going back to the, you know, it wasn't intentional in kind of a sense of how it happened, you know, it was totally intentional to make it fit, you know, in my head canon for Panathor. We haven't done this in a while, so people may not have heard me say this, but like, there's no way in the world I'm ever making a Harry Potter army, because that doesn't fit in my head canon for Panathor.
Yeah.
For me, whenever I have a background, it's got to be logical for the universe or the environment in which I'm putting it. So I'm not going to have a Frozen army or whatever.
Yeah.
When I look at it, it needs to convey to me that it belongs in the universe in which I'm setting it. You know, a few basic things that I had to come up with first was, why do these halflings find themselves as a successor kingdom? Why were they in the Dragon Teeth Mountains? The way I went about it was unit by unit. And that's one of the interesting things, is each unit, as I painted it and as it developed it, got its own individual lore, but tied it back to maybe the overarching story of the army. Let's jump to your second question, which is, what are your sources of inspiration?
Yeah, so for me doing my herd army, I always loved the visual aesthetics of like Greek mythology satyrs, you know, half beast, half man. You also have, the beastmen from Warhammer. I always liked their aesthetic. For my army, I knew I didn't want to go with beastmen. There's plenty of models out there I could have chose, but I wanted them to be a serious looking army, but not evil. Which the beastmen, I mean, they're covered in skulls and all sorts of other stuff. So I knew I wanted to kind of mix the two of those. Of course, minotaurs, I mean, always absolutely fantastic. Easy to start writing stuff around them. You're talking about using the maps. I always try to tie it into the world of Panathor. So usually I'll start, and once I get to a point where I'm really thinking about an idea for the story of the army, because I'm going to be working on my fourth army this year, and they all have different stories. But once I start really thinking about the story of them, I just pull up a map of Panathor and I start looking around, like, where does it make sense for this army to originate, to migrate to, all this kind of stuff. So every one of my armies is tied to a region or even a city of the world of Panathor. So that's always a great place to get inspired, is going to look at maps. Of course, I mean, old fantasy movies watching or books or anything like that are always great sources of inspiration. But Greek mythology tales about the satyrs and their god, who was the god of the hunt, was always really interesting.
Yeah, you hit on a couple things there. One in particular is like the idea that you're finding a place on the map and where is this army from? And you know what? That's a lot of what I do as well. My different spin here is, and it goes back to, I've mentioned this 100 times on the podcast, but I went to a Warhammer event one time and Anthony Reynolds, the author of the Ratoni Army, was there. And he made a comment about the best worlds are sandboxes, where there are like key tent poles that you can kind of hang your hat on, but it's the space in between. You're given the luxury to find room to breathe. And so with this army in particular, I'm looking at the map and I'm like, Kingdoms of Men. I'm like, well, you know, the successor kingdoms are all kind of in the south. you know, in the Younger Kingdoms or maybe more in the north. And I'm like, well, what if I split the difference and I put them in the Dragon Teeth Mountains? And there's not a lot of stuff written about the people that inhabit the Dragon Teeth Mountains, certainly not from a Kingdoms of Men perspective. It was fertile ground. Where are my sources of inspiration for this army, though? I typically would say, like, the fantasy stuff, you know, the Lord of the Rings. But this, for me, was Kingdom of Heaven, right? Like, that movie where you had all these, like,
oh, yeah,
pilgrims and crusader knights and marching forth in this giant mass. Visually, it set everything in motion. I wanted an army that had a lot of foot troops. And if I was going to do that, that sort of meant, okay, I'm painting that. Now I have to find a reason for all these folks to exist, right? I wanted the background to tell a story of individual units. The background of the army is that they're a little kingdom that revolves around trading, protecting a key passage through the mountains. They have a lot of money. So they have paid professional military. And those troops look like that. They have armor. It's all shiny. Da, da, da. But I also wanted to sprinkle in, you know, the common man mustering to the field, right? Like that, oh, they're not just all professional military units. You know, there's a militia mob made up of just every Joe Blow coming out of the mine. One of the units that I point to a lot is, you know, I have a unit called the Sons of the Drunken Ram, which are, and we'll get to the story of it, but essentially they are patrons of a bar called the Drunken Ram. So the unit is forming up outside the bar. Their bartender is waving them a fair adieu, like, oh, have a great time. You know, once you hear the background story, it all kind of makes sense. So it goes back to, though, I want this army to feel like it's part of Panathor, and it evolves unit by unit. You know, another example of where both tying it back to Panathor, the existing lore, and adding to it unit by unit is the Fanatics, right? I have a horde of Fanatics, and they came much later in the army, like two and a half, three years after I started. And for me, if you read the original Rodeo fluff where you have the Children of the Fall, right? The Twin Comets and all that. To me, it made sense the Fanatics would be part of the Children of the Fall. Even though they're not part of the Rodian army, they still maintain some of that culture. And what also is interesting about it is the Children of the Fall, really, it's not halflings, right? In the Rodian list, they're humans. But I thought, well, it's a neat transition to make them, number one, they're halflings. But number two, they're Fanatics. They're dressed in gowns. There's so many sources for inspiration. You're only limited by your own imagination. With the salamanders, I said, I want a thing that looks like habitating near a river, right? Like maybe Edge of the Nile. What's that movie called? Murder on the Nile?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a relatively new one. And my wife and I were watching, and I'm like, wow, that terrain. Oh, that. So for that army, that was kind of the jumping off point. So you never know where you're going to find inspiration.
And for me personally, I always enjoy stories more when it's not chosen one. Gathering the army and defeating the big. I really enjoy stories when it's like, hey, this local knight gathered a group of peasants and they were going to fight back against this invading group of marauders.
Always want to be the underdog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I never like playing, you know, the Karl Franz or the, you know, whoever's the big, you know, main guy in the faction. I always like making up a story for, you know, some Joe Schmo little. Like my Rordia army, it's like a fairly poor area of the land, and it's some like real low baron who's the leader of my Rordia army. And that was a situation where I did let my lore affected my list building in that scenario where I had this idea of the story in my head when I was painting all the cheap kind of crappier units, the pole arms, the spearmen, all that stuff. And then I had this idea that these, you know, higher ranked nobles were going to come to the aid of this lowly baron who, you know, kind of raised the peasant fjords and were fighting back. And so then I was like, I need units for this higher class military group to be coming to their aid, and ended up painting some cavalry and some honor guard stuff like that.
You're touching on that next point, which is, does your army's lore affect your play style or your list building? And 100% agree with what you said. The lore is going to affect what's in the army. The one example I would give that's not even, it's not Kings of War, it's Star Wars Legion, but like my Rebels army for Legion is based in Endor.
Oh, yeah.
If I can't make it fit my universe that I've created, well, then it doesn't work. And obviously, Tauntauns don't live on Endor. So if you want to play Tauntauns, you got to do something different. Going back to that Kingdoms of Men thing, I want lots of dudes. I don't want any humans in the list. I limited myself to the halflings that Westphalia produced. So that you're talking sword and board, spear, pike, and they didn't really even make pike. They made spears, so I had to convert the pike, crossbows, mm-hmm. guns, and the like. And where some of the flavor came in is, you know, I added some ogres, but I didn't add them as ogres. I added them as war engines. You have an ogre carrying a giant cannon. Well, that's your cannon. So this army is a trading post tucked away in the mountains. So, for example, there's no way there's ever going to be chariots in Lisk.
How would it traverse all that rough ground? Yeah.
Exactly right. You mentioned playstyle too. In my mind, I used to be a Tomb King player and I was always like to be the counterpuncher. So I'd take the punch and then I would counterpunch. Same thing when I played dwarves over the years, right? Well, that's what I wanted here too. So I want lots of pike. I want lots of foot guard. And behind them, I want war engines. The lore affects what goes in your list, but then the models you choose to represent those units will then inform the background even further, if that makes sense.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. Played Herd for 6 months or so, and I'd been wanting to try out the Minotaur Chariot unit that they have. I was looking for models, looking and looking. I couldn't find anything I liked because neither iteration of that unit made sense to me, because a Minotaur pulling a chariot, to me, it was faster than a Minotaur just running. Like the guard, it's faster than the Guardian Brute, so that didn't make sense to me. And then the reverse of that, a Minotaur being pulled on a chariot seemed weird to me because it was a humanoid beast. Essentially, I felt like, you know, enslaving other beasts to, you know, ride it around. And again, like I said, it's a nature army. It's a neutral. So it just seemed odd to me. And then I found the models that I liked, which were some 3D printed one page rules, centaur guys. And they looked real beefy. So I just had my buddy Joseph just blow them up to about, I think, probably double the size. And so now they are take up a chariot base. They're these huge, they're like, you know, a dragon ogre size kind of models. And I came up with a whole backstory just for that race. And kind of put in a little bit of why Minotaur chariots would be their unit tag, but, I'll go over that later, but yeah, definitely, lore, being affected by your model choices is definitely a thing that's happened for me.
Let's jump into the idea that your army of lore affects the army aesthetics. And I'll start, which is, I'm actually the opposite. We just talked about how the model choices will affect the lore. Even more important is the army aesthetics will affect the lore. You know, for me, you know, I visualize what I want a unit to look like. And then I actually do it. I actually paint it. And then I make the lore to explain it. So again, going back to that fanatics, it explains why they have auburn cloaks, you know, and why the Sons of the Drunken Ram are hanging outside of a tavern. You know, the lore essentially is my get out of jail free card to use some models creatively. Starting this process with the Beast Cav, right? Like I hadn't been using Beast Cav, but obviously they're now a real significant part of the list. And so I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to use Beast Cav, they're not Dracons. And so logically, I do have Griffins, which make up my wing beasts, right? For my generals. Well, I could have Griffin Riders. Okay. And so that's where I'm going. Okay, well, what model range would I use? Well, I'd probably still use the ones, it's called Blue Giant now, but they used to be known as Atlantis Miniatures. And they have a range of 3D printable stuff now, including at least one Griffin. So I need to go in there. Well, can I make a couple different poses with a monstrous cavalry unit like that? The last thing I want is to have three exactly this pose the same. That would look terrible. Now, in a big unit of pike where there's, you know, 30 models and there's only five or six sculpts. Okay, that to me is okay. It kind of gets lost in the mass. But when there's only three of them, I've really got to spend some time there. So, you know, for me, it's army aesthetics first, and then the lore kind of comes in behind to kind of support it. What about you?
Yeah. So for me, honestly, it goes both ways depending on what I'm which army we're talking about. Because again, I've come up with background stories for all of mine so far. But so one thing I did want to ask is, do you ever think about your unit history as far as what they've done on the table? So like I knew a guy who, when he would deploy a unit in games, he would deliver the kind of the games of the Game of Thrones, like, you know, Daenerys Stormborn, first of her name, Breaker of Chains. Yeah, he would do that for his unit. He'd be like, oh, this is, you know, the Stoneclaw Regiment of Hilderheim, they broke the, you know, flank of the orc horde at, you know, and he'd come up with some, you know, he did like a little spiel every time. Do you think about the history of your unit on the tabletop, like feats they've done or anything like that?
You know, that's interesting. All my units have names and have you know, like a paragraph background at minimum. I've never actually thought about telling my opponent.
Yeah, it was a little extra, but I thought it was super creative.
But you got me thinking, like, maybe that would be fun, right? Like to do that. I have actually thought about dressing in character as part of the army, and that'd be amazing too. Have you done this?
Almost an intrusive thought every once in a while where, you know, I'll be like, look at my Moonfang model, and I'll be like, yeah, he took like 18 wounds from John Blakemore at Forge last year and just shrugged it all off by the end of the game. I should come up with some, you know, spiel for him on how he's bulletproof or, you know, something like that. So I think about it every once in a while. It never gets brought into fruition or anything. But I just was curious if you had done anything like that before.
Occasionally in the past, I might add something in, you know, to the background of a unit if they do something remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that with any of the Kingdoms of Men army. Now you got me thinking about, well, man, because I've had some remarkable things. Like my master in particular has a whole background story. You know, his name is Hilltopple. What's cool about it is the model is a halfling paymaster riding in a little box that's carried by his buddy Brugrock. It's like a giant ogre. But yeah, now you got me thinking about, well, okay, what about, how do I regale, you know, all the cool things that Baron has done?
I think it'd be especially cool at events like we just went to Blue City Brawl. I think that's a very kind of over the top fun event. And I think that kind of thing would be really fun there. You and your teammate both kind of regaling your units and their feats as you're deploying.
Funny you mentioned Blue City Brawl. So I ran it for the first 3 years. And when I ran it, we had an opening ceremony. You know, the expectation was that you would share the background. And if you had a grudge match, you would explain, you know, why these were your mortal enemy. Seeing how creative these players were, we had some guys do interpretive dance, kind of like it culminated with presenting Simba. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
From Lion King.
Yeah.
We had lots of people that would bring guitars and actually wrote ballads.
Oh, wow.
You met Will Sinclair at the event. He's a thespian. He would deliver these almost Shakespearean monologues for his army. Going to the next point that we wanted to touch on, which is that lore with, you know, that lore interaction with other players or other players' armies. For me, the doubles event is where you make that happen. So I have an army, you have an army. At a minimum, we got to aesthetically make them tied together via basing. But mm-hmm. You want to take that next level. Let's have a reason for these armies to be allies. Let's have a reason for them to coexist in Panathor and have a common cause. Taking that a step further, I've also in the past had armies where maybe my friend was developing my mortal enemy, right? Like, and I knew that artistically, I might have units that have like dead versions of his army and vice versa with him, right?
Yeah.
In the background, we would recount these great stories. And, you know, and I should mention, Direct Misfire, Bensom has done a great job at a couple events where he wrote stories to encapsulate what transpired on the table.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was really cool. And so if you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend going back and listening to it.
No, I'm going to have to go find that.
You have a battle report, right? It's like, okay, my army moved here. I shot here. I killed this.
Yeah.
I rolled this for route. But actually giving it like a dramatic reading, it's just... But what about you in terms of interacting with other players? We did a doubles event for Blue Sea recently with Joseph. But like that one, you guys just took separate armies, I assume, right?
I don't know, 2 months before I messaged Devlin and I just said, hey, you guys said it was going to be in March this year, right? He was like, yeah, here's the days, here's the pack. You know, he gave me the whole deal. And I was like, okay, cool. So obviously in 2 months, we were not going to paint. We were already doing other stuff. We were not going to redo stuff. And one thing is Joseph really likes to do is individual basing because he uses his models for other games a lot as well. So we talked about next year we're going to do bringing Twilight Kin, and I'm going to bring my Abyssal Dwarves that we're working on this year. And we decided on similar basing, and then I think we'll try to do a display board of some kind next year for that.
It's interesting you said Abyssal Dwarves and Twilight Kin. So both of those armies are tied independently to big bads in the lore of Panathor, right? You know, Forces of the Abyss and the Nightstalkers, which you would argue are not the best of friends. It'll be interesting to hear the tenuous relationship your two armies have. It's going to be ripe for intriguing storytelling.
And my initial thoughts, I have not discussed with Joseph at all yet, but my initial thoughts were it could be cool. Both forces were individually smashed by some great Northern Alliance army. Separate battles, they kind of met up by circumstance, and they're both being chased by this large force of Northern Alliance. And it's like, okay, we can either fight them together, or we can kill each other or be killed by them, kind of situation. Like we're not getting out of this if we don't kind of band together for this fight. So it's like a very tenuous kind of, in these exact circumstances, our goals are the same here. Once this is over, of course, we are both going our separate ways, or potentially, you know, killing each other. But somebody's getting out of here alive to fight them.
Yeah, it reminds me of Varanger, right? They have a very flexible alignment structure. They're usually evil. But in certain campaigns where the edge, you know, where the forces of the Abyss are the big bad, well, they're the mortal enemies of them. So in that case, they're going to be on the forces of good while it, you know, suited their needs.
Other than that, I do have my leader of my Rordia army, Baron Ulrich III, and his grandfather was promoted from knighthood to baronry during a battle. He saved one of the dukes of the land, was about to be killed by
Skullface,
who I'm sure anyone who's been around for a while has heard. So my hero's claim to fame is that he fought Skullface for 30 seconds and didn't die. Reinforcements showed up and Skullface, you know, the orcs fell back. But that's my main hero's entire claim to fame. And the reason he's a baron now is because his grandfather survived 30 seconds against Skullface in a battle to try to save his commanding officer.
One of the reasons to do all this work with the background is that sometimes it's immortalized in the fiction. Skullface is a good example of that. But there are other people that have come up with characters for their army that have found their way into the novels from Wing to Star. Not only is it self-fulfilling in the sense that, you know, I'm getting something out of it, there is the possibility that this thing will live on. A little bit different, but yet there are some similarities to his Blaster podcast mascot. He sort of lives on and is sort of bigger than where he started.
So last question we have before we get into the army stories is, does your story continue over time, or is it more of just an origin story for your army? And that's kind of where it ends. Most of mine are origin stories that I have added upon over time if I add new units. Maybe this unit came into the army when the army went on campaign to this certain region and recruited them. Or like in the instance of my Ratkin and my Abyssal Dwarf army, when I did my Ratkins, I had no idea I was going to do an Abyssal Dwarf army next. And my lore for them is basically they planned, the broodmother of the clan planned a revolt of all the slaves under the Abyssal Dwarves. And in doing so, they enlisted the aid of some of the orc slaves that the Abyssal Dwarves had enslaved and laboring in their mines. But the real plan was that most of the Ratkin and the orcs would start fighting, and then basically her and a select few of her stronger, more capable retinue would kind of escape during the chaos. So they've escaped from the Abyssal Dwarves and made their way to a city in Rordia, and they're basically taken in under the deal that they provide cheap labor for the Rordian city. But they soon grow to too big and all that. All that to say, my Abyssal Dwarf army, when I decided to do them, now they are the faction that was oppressing my Ratkin, that were enslaving my Ratkin. Howling Peaks Volunteer Labor Company, as they are known. It kind of moved that story on, continued that story, and also led me to come up with a whole little backstory for Jag Bloodspike, who is the named hero in the formation that they have just received. So I thought up a whole little backstory for him that I thought was kind of cool too. So how about you, Rob?
I'm very much like you in the sense that it is an origin story. It is a snapshot in time. It runs a corollary to the way I build the army as well. So I built an army, let's say 1,500 points, however many units. But over time, you add new units, right? And as you add new units, those individual new units get their stories, and it builds the collective narrative. It evolves the collective narrative. You know, I was thinking, though, is it really showing the passage of time? And I don't think it does, because I don't ever go back and substantially change the lore or the, like, have you ever, like, actually went back and, like, as a rule for me, once something's done, it's done. So I painted the unit, I move on and paint new stuff.
Yep.
But have you ever gone back and painted, like, oh, this unit went through a big battle, changed the unit in some way?
For me, I enjoy it more than when I first started, but painting to me is still a little bit of a chore. I enjoy looking at the finished product and knowing that I did it, Like, I enjoy it more knowing, like, hey, I just painted and based that horde. It looks really good to me, you know, yada, yada. But it's not an enjoyable therapeutic thing in itself for me yet. So to go back and redo work I've already done is really hard for me unless I look at it and something looks terrible on it. That is a really interesting idea, and I have not thought about actually going back and physically altering a unit to show, like, a piece of a story having taken place.
Yeah, I had one idea that'd be awesome. I don't know that my anxiety would let me do it, but, like, if I had a, let's say you had a horde of pike, and they took catastrophic losses. So I rip models off, and now it's a regiment because they have so many losses. Like,
oh,
that would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, typically once I have something painted, it's kind of locked in. So, well, what we wanted to do next is actually share a little bit about the armies that we've created, and maybe we'll pick out some of the more interesting units. And Chase, do you want to start off with, you know, an overview of the army?
My army is called the Rovan Forest Temple Guardians. Rovan Forest is located a little bit northwest of League of Rordia's territory, the foot of a small mountain range on the border of the Mammoth Steppe and the Successor Kingdoms. So again, tying that in using the map, I decided I wanted to, you know, flesh out my story a little bit more. I kind of looked at the map and saw where does it make sense for them to have gone. And also that way it could tie into my Rordia army at some point if I wanted it to, stuff like that. But the ancient woodlands are home of a long forgotten site of power. The Wicked Ones designed such sites as the Rovan Temple to act as portals to transport massive armies across vast distances. Some treasure hunters recently discovered the site, not knowing what it was. Word of their discovery spread throughout the land until this rumor made its way to Galahir. The Green Lady needs to maintain fragile balance in the world, and anyone getting their hands on this power would be disastrous. She decides to send her herd army to Rovan Forest to protect the recently discovered abyssal portal that had been left abandoned for centuries. As the herd's best tractor, Softhoof, who is the named hero in the herd's formation, was put in charge of the mission, leading her legendary unit, the Silent Hunt, comprised of tribal trappers, especially trained by Softhoof herself in the art of hit-and-run tactics in the deep woods of Galahir. The Silent Hunt can dispatch any small party of abyssal scouts or curious human treasure hunters, but when it comes to a stand-up fight against a large force, they will need more brute strength. For this, she relies on the mainline troops of the herd, from everyman's tribal warriors to the hulking guardian brutes and the elite longhorns. Centaurs are also a mainstay in any herd army, whether scouting outside the borders of the woodlands or overwhelming the flanks of their enemies. On their long march to the Rovan Forest, Softhoof's forces were met by a tribe of ogre boltars, whom the Green Lady had very politely requested join them in this endeavor. Large beasts standing at 10 feet tall with broad muscular bodies that roam the Mammoth Steppe in nomadic tribes. Their real name, only spoken in their own language, is unknown to most of the world, but given their appearance, they have been given the unofficial title of ogre boltars since they look very much like ogre-sized centaurs. So that's kind of first overview of my army. It kind of encapsulates all the units that are in it, gives them a little bit of a mention for the most part, and gives you an idea of what it's going to look like.
We kind of follow the same path, which is, you know, where I start with an army too is like, okay, what is the army going to look like? If you think about like classical animation, you know, they have these character sheets, what a character would look like from different positions. I've had a dwarf army once where, you know, I wrote down rules. For example, they don't have banners because they're mining. So every banner is a torch.
Yeah.
And with this Kingdoms of Halfmen army, I did the same thing where really this opening narrative is really telling people who they are and where they're from. But it's also telling me, you know, okay, these are the type of units you're going to see. And if something's excluded from that, well, then you can read into that where like it's going to inform my list building. Where did the idea come from?
So they started there because that's where they reside currently in the lore of Panathor. But again, I bought this temple random piece of terrain and I was painting it up. It was going to be part of my display board for Kings of Memphis last year. And I was just like, man, okay, so this is, you know, this is going to tie. I'm like, what if they were defending this temple that's been lost for centuries, you know, in the middle of this forest? And so I, you know, like I always do, I popped open a map of Panathor, started looking around and found that patch of forest at the foot of those mountains. I figured it was kind of small, unknown, which I always like, but it's still realistic for the lady to have sent them there. I feel like versus, you know, they'd have to cross every abyssal faction or something like that to get there. And then again, if I wanted to at a later date, I could tie my Rordia story into there somehow.
I'll share mine. It sets the stage. And so welcome to the Kingdom of Halfmen. Nestled within the northern foothills of the Dragon Teeth Mountains and accessible by a few treacherous paths known only to the most skilled rangers and mountain goats, lies the unassuming halfling settlement of Fort Erne. Founded as a provisional mining camp near several rich mineral deposits, the settlement makes heavy use of the nearby Passage of Cataclysm to move the ingots of their labor to the heart of the successor kingdoms to whom they've pledged their fealty. Given their close proximity to the fertile lands of Roria and several northern dwarven strongholds, Fort Dern has become a prominent trading post among halflings, men, and free dwarves. So more recently, with the completion of the Great Wall along the edge of the Dragon Teeth Mountains, Fort Dern has essentially become cut off from many of the southern men they once called brothers. Fort Dern now finds themselves as the solitary steward of the Passage of Cataclysm and maintains a vigilant garrison to safeguard this increasingly vital trading route. Equipped by the profits of trading and hardened by the harsh realities of mountain life, Fort Dern is prepared for the great reckoning at hand. That's an origin story. Like, this brings you up to a point.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a little bit of their history, but tells you the snapshot on time in which we find them. That opening part is the most important piece of the background for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm going to spend most of my time.
I really like that you tied in actual events that, you know, have happened in Panathor. I think that's pretty cool. Most of mine is just places, times, you know, moving from one place to another sort of thing. But no, that's really cool that you included stuff from Halpy's Rift, actual story that we, as the players, you know, shaped in that campaign.
Yeah, the Great Wall. It was one of the, I think it was one of the scenarios where you were tasked with helping defend the construction of the Great Wall. Do you have any like specific unit stuff that you want to mention?
Softhoof and the Silent Hunt are probably my only like named units. I had thought about coming up with names for some of them. After I came up with a few, I started thinking, I feel like the herd wouldn't think that way. I feel like they wouldn't think of like, hey, these 20 people are now going to be known as the Iron Claw Regiment and stuff. You know, I feel like their military would be a little bit more organic, a little bit less bureaucratic kind of, and less, I don't know, just a little bit less human. I started thinking I was putting too many human attributes into the army by adding stuff like unit names and things like that. I have a quick background of the Ogre Bulltars I did come up with to justify my model choices for the Minotaur Chariot, so I can go over that.
Fire away.
If you haven't heard of Ogre Bulltars, you're not alone. They're very rare and not to be trifled with. On the rare occasion that an interaction has been recorded, the Bulltars are very reserved and quiet until insulted or threatened, intentionally or otherwise. The only recorded interaction where such thing took place could not be confirmed, as it was found on a bloodied scrap of parchment, believed to belong to a traveling scribe's journal. The small portion of the entry that was legible described an unbridled fury that erupted from the chief Bulltar when a traveling merchant attempted to strike a very one-sided bargain at the expense of the tribe. The phrases quickness of a cat and strength of an owlbear were underlined, along with a phrase describing something about the particular angle of the merchant's spine. Since none living know the name of the scribe and he has never been seen since the finding of this parchment scrap, there is no way to verify whether this is fact or fiction. What we do know is that Ogre Bulltars are creatures of devastating strength, especially on the charge. When a tribe of Bulltars has begun the stampede across the field towards their enemies, they pick up so much dust with that heavily obscures the charging beasts. Those on the receiving end of such charge have often mistaken their elongated forms for minotaurs pulling chariots. While they are not as accustomed to fighting in the dense woods as they are in the open steppes, they will surely be an impressive combat unit to add to Softhoof's retinue.
Awesome.
Kind of a little background I came up with because they're like huge armored centaur looking guys that are all beefed up and stuff. So I just thought a little fun flavor to add in there. Also kind of, you know, explaining the non-chariot chariots in the room.
I'll start with my mounted captain, who is the head of this army. His name is a Baron Hilltoppling Brigork the Ogre. I remember he rides on the back of the ogre. Ensuring the security and long-term stability of Fort Dern can be a difficult job at times. But being the head paymaster also yields Baron Hilltopple certain perks and a whole lot of interesting friends that a halfling of his stature couldn't dream of. He is a halfling of self-made means, which insulates him from the normal trappings of positional wealth that ruin most people. But even Baron would admit he covets his power and appreciates the wide latitude he's afforded. Fortunately, Brigork, his ogre bodyguard and friend, is ever present and quick to put him back on track should he stray from course. So I just wanted to give like a sense of, okay, this is the guy that's the head of it. And again, it goes back to what you said before from a theme standpoint. This is not the greatest hero in the world. Like, he's a self-made halfling who just rose to power. And his power really is he's good at being a merchant in terms of trading and the like. That's why he's head paymaster, right? He's not a general.
He's not some hero who's going to come in and, you know, single-handedly take on a horde of enemies.
The only frustrating thing is sometimes when I take the captain when he's not mounted, then well, then like this model doesn't work. I find an excuse anytime I can if I'm taking the captain to try to take him mounted. The model, if you haven't seen it, it's literally a halfling paymaster. He's holding a bag of coin. He's standing in this box, and his ogre friend is, you know, it's wearing it like a backpack.
Yeah.
It's mounted on a cavalry base. Makes perfect sense that he's mounted.
Yeah.
Talking about mounted models, you know, another army unit that this is what's weird is I don't think I've actually ever played him in this configuration, which is mounted. The really crappy part, it's the best looking model in the whole army.
Oh.
Spectus Blue Lake was raised in a small town on the Ordovician plain. His father was an exceptional farmer who masterfully tilled the fertile lands of Rordia, while his mother was a budding alchemist providing her unique wares for trade. His life was that of any other halfling in the league, comfortable, safe, and secure. However, his idyllic world came to an abrupt end with a catastrophic experiment that took the lives of his parents. Initial anger toward the Celestians for allowing this to happen was gradually replaced by the disillusionment of his predicament. Spectus looked up to the sky for relief, but the only thing he could see were the mountains. Fortunately, in Fordern, he not only found a common ally that understood his plight, but also shared a desire to get back to the Golden Era. He now proudly carries the Fordern army banner to war, mounted atop his fearsome battle goat, Bukuten. We talked about it originally. Like, I wanted to give a sense of, like, some of these guys were from Rordia. Like, it makes perfect sense that they would be. And why would you leave this, like, you know, if you think in terms of, like, Lord of the Rings, like, why would anybody leave the Shire? It's perfect, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, like, in the case of Spectus, like, it was a catastrophic thing that changed the trajectory of his life. He was living in the shadow of the mountains, and now he's went up and he's living with the mountains. One other unit that I mentioned before that I think would be fun to explore is the Sons of the Drunken Ram, which is a regiment of knights. In the olden days before Fordern became the vital center of trade that it is now, there was a much greater separation between rich and poor. Wealth bought the rich the status of nobility and afforded them more stewardship of the town. Many things have changed, and their importance within Fordern has greatly diminished. Now, this collection of nobility congregates nightly at their favorite watering hole. Though they may be legends in their own mind, this motley crew still answers the call. At times of war, they muster into a volunteer knightly order, equipped from their own coffers and aptly named after the pub they hold so dear. Ironically, this self-sacrifice has gone a long way to restoring the nobility they once possessed in the eyes of the townfolk. These guys used to be nobles.
Yeah.
But the town changed.
Yeah.
And if you want to work hard, you can make your way up. And the fact these guys kind of fell out of favor, but then rather than money, through their self-sacrifice, have kind of brought themselves back into good standing is a lot of fun. I should mention one of the other distinctions. These knights are goat cavalry.
Are they the Gothic knights?
Yeah, these are just like the Gothic knights that are riding giant rams. But then there is another unit that I just called Winged Fury, which is halfling winged hussar models. It's less about the story for them and more about the unit itself. The unit is sitting atop a cliff edge. For me, it like evokes Helm's Deep, like the Rohirrim coming up to the edge. There's Gandalf and they're like coming down. That's kind of what I was going for. It's funny because, you know, one of the things that I've always get mentioned a lot is, man, your bases aren't all full. Yeah, they're halflings, bro. Like, I can have 40 guys or 35 guys on a horde, and it's still only going to take up half the base. And I've done things with the basing to fill up, like, with rock formations and stuff to really fill the bases. But on this unit of Winged Hussar guys in particular, which I call Winged Fury, I bunched them all up right up next to the edge, just like in in Helm's Deep, where they're all kind of, like, right there. Half of the base is empty, but all 10 knights are standing right along this edge.
I love like your shield wall model with the whole huge cliff wall in the background of them looks absolutely awesome. And your drunken ram was Westfalia's halfling houses, the one you used for that.
They have like halfling house facades. And so I was able to cut it up and build it into the mountainside. And I've got more plans. I mean, I'm not done with this army by a long shot. There's more coming. This is going to be my forever project. I will never be done with this army. And now that I think about it, you know, the army has evolved because like when I started, you know, we started in a time where giants were on 50 millimeter bases and I used a giant war bear from Atlantis Miniatures to represent that. Well, obviously, from a scale perspective, not big enough to be a giant anymore. So I've upgraded to a real giant in the last couple of years. I mean, I've added a manticore to the army. Looking at your army, you know, what are some of the standout units?
You talking visually or on the table?
Well, for me, it always starts visually. The lore comes second.
So I love my basing I did on my Silent Hunt, which is the formation. So two regiments of their archers and a hero, the soft hoof, the hero model for it. I love the basing I did on that. It was one group I had slowly wading out of like a pond or a river or something. So I actually snipped their legs off in increasing amounts as they got deeper into the water. I did a little bit of water effects on there. It came out a little bit too blue maybe, but I think overall it looks pretty good. The water looks like it's in motion around their feet and stuff like that. The other one, there's a giant log laid down there. They're fighting over the top of, you know, shooting over the top of it, stuff like that. So I like those a lot. And then the Minotaur chariot models I did that Joseph printed off for me. They're just fantastic models. It's the first time I tried something different with my paint for them, where I did a metallic paint and then I did a regular, I did a speed paint coat over it. So it looked like metal colored in that color now instead of, you know, so I did green for them and I think it turned out really, really good.
It's really good.
My shot of my heroes there at the bottom of my army list. I love the Avatar, the father model I got. He was perfect once I saw him. He's like this wooden creature with like a ram's head on top. And then he's got these wings that are spanning out behind him that have, instead of feathers, they're leaves on them. And for him, I just thought that was an absolutely perfect model. And then I have a similarly awesome model for a forest warden that I have actually yet to use on the table because I have no shambling units. But the model was too good not to get. And he is just this massed root tree branch leaves and, you know, kind of similar sort of skull on his face that just looks really, really good. I guess my last one I'd do would be my guardian brutes. They are blue giant 3D printed ogres. And then I got these huge 3D printed trees on their bases for handles. So it just looks like they're in the big and the ground's really uneven. I did some foam work on there to make it look a little bit more natural. Not everything was, you know, perfectly flat and all that stuff with a bunch of greenery. And I tried this army. I tried for the first time the laser cut plants. I don't know if you've messed with those at all.
I haven't. Are those paper?
It's like a paper punch out kind of thing, and they're flat, and they kind of, there's videos online that'll show you how to kind of work it in, and it's a little finicky and can be kind of, you know, like you're messing with some little piece of paper for a while to get it to look like a plant, but on the base I think they look great. So that's like the bracken you can see on some of the pictures I put in that document are that stuff. I guess that'd be my standout units for the army as far as looks wise. And then on the table, I took a horde of the Minotaur chariots, and I took the Stampede, the special upgraded regiment, both of those to Forge last year. And other than failing my wild charge multiple times when I needed a two instead of a one, they performed pretty fantastically. They hit like a freaking ton of bricks, and at 16, 18, and 17, 19 with Fury. That's pretty awesome. And if you get some longhorns next to them, you can get them rallied up even higher than that.
You know, you mentioned Blue Giant. Both of our armies have models from them there. If you haven't checked out Blue Giant Studios, which used to be Atlantis Miniatures, they used to make resin sculpts. They've gotten a little bit away from that, and they're really more into 3D printed stuff now. You really need to check out Blue Giant. If you have any large infantry monsters in your list, especially if there's any room for anything that maybe is based in mythology, they have a range of just cool monsters. Like I have a Yeti in my list, who's this giant Yeti, and he's one of my giants in the army. My Manticore that I mentioned is from there. The Griffin that's in my army now as a winged beast is there. They also make 3D printed versions of those Griffins. So honestly, I don't know what it is. It's hard for me to say what it is. It's just when I look at those models, it just makes me want to buy them. It makes me want to paint them. And they're just so amazing. And there's a very cohesive look to them. You know, if you take the Manticore and you put it by the Griffin and you put it by the Minotaur, like you can tell that's the same designer. It has the same visual cues. I love their models.
Yes, they are fantastic models. And I remember years ago looking at them when I was first starting to get into the game for models, and I absolutely loved their models, but they were way out of my price range at the time. But yeah, now that they're doing 3D printing stuff, it's absolutely great.
When I stumbled onto them, gosh, 7-8 years ago, they were actually one of the very first sponsors for the Blue Sea Brawl.
Oh, wow.
They sent me a bunch of cool resin monsters. They call them trolls or big giant cave troll, but it's the size of a giant, like a giant wyvern. And yeah, I mean, they were always very supportive of what we were trying to do. And I will say, if you're going to buy the physical ones, make sure you buy them typically around Black Friday, because they do have a good sale. That you won't be disappointed by the sculpt. And I have a couple of the 3D printed versions that I had Mike at the local store print for me. And again, they don't disappoint. It's the same quality, buttery smooth detail. So amazing stuff. I was just thinking about, as you're talking about, like, what is your standout unit? The army it's sort of known as the army that's living in the mountains with the basing that looks like it's from the mountains, right? You know what I mean? Like, there's several units that have these giant 4-inch mountainous backdrops. And by the way, I should mention, if you want to hear all the gritty details about this army, it's all on Dash 28. If you just search for me, you'll come up with a bunch of articles that I wrote over time, several years at this point ago. And I also need to give a shout out, because I didn't mention it, and I feel bad that I didn't, but you know, a lot of this stuff I developed with my daughter. So my daughter Aubrey helped me come up with some of the names and some of the background. And so we collectively did this together. So, you know, I know I sort of portrayed it as I'm like the sole proprietor of this army, but the reality is I'm just a steward, right? And you know, she's probably the actual run in the army. But I've already said my army's never finished, and I've got some ideas of what I want to add to it. But what about your army?
So model-wise, I have more infantry to add. I've got some more Longhorn models and some more tribal infantry models to add to it. I also have, for the day when I want to mess around with it and try Beast of Nature with no wings, I have two models for that. One of them is the, I think it's the Knucker model from Trident Realms. And the other one is, what is that guy called? The Varinger and Northern Alliance model, the blind guy, the big blind monster guy who can't see anything, gets like bonus for if stuff's already damaged, I think, or something like that. Can't remember the name. So model wise, I got some additions I want to make to it over time. Story wise, the overall arching story of my army from where they meet the Ogre Boltars, basically they get to Rovan Forest. Abyssals have, of course, heard about this discovery, so they send some scouting parties. And the scouting parties don't return, courteous of Softhoof and her Silent Hunt team. They send a full-fledged army to the forest to take it, because they know something was worthwhile there if none of their scout teams have returned. Huge epic battle between the Herd and the Abyssals. The Herd winning but suffering heavy casualties. And then where my army really is the full thing, because I have Hydras and Druids and all sorts of stuff in my list, is the Green Lady sends them some reinforcements. And along with those reinforcements, not only Herd units, but they also get Druids that come with them so they can summon the Avatar of the Father when needed, which is in all my lists. They also commune with the beasts of the forest itself, so they're helping defend the temple now. And the idea is that, like, other factions here of this giant abyssal army coming in, attacking this relatively unknown woodland, so their curiosities peak, and they do similar. They send forces as well, but when they get there, the druids have essentially turned part of the forest around the temple into like a living fortress. So like the walls are made up of giant roots embedding into rocks and surrounding them, and you know, there's towers, I put in air quotes, around it, with, you know, they're just giant trees sticking up around the wall and stuff. And the gate is, you know, a magically infused gate that opens for a friend and bars foes from entry. So it's like when other groups start showing up, and that's my dream display board, would be a fortress like that behind my army that kind of looks completely natural, roots and trees and big boulder kind of things making up the actual walls and gate and stuff like that. That kind of ends the story, the origin story there, because then that's when it becomes my actual army, is with all of those elements combined. Now it's really my Herd list.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can start with one army and it can evolve into something else because of the way Mantic has set up the army list where you have shared units.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that question we were talking about earlier. Like, is it an origin story or does it like evolve? And I think, man, you know, I said earlier, like, oh, it's an origin story. But, you know, I'm thinking now in my head, like, Beast Cavalry weren't even in the list when I started this army. And they did add them a few years ago in one of the Clash of Kings book. But I was like, you know, maybe at that point I was doing other armies or something. But now I'm thinking like, well, man, when I do get back to this army, okay, it's a unit of Griffins. That'd be awesome. But just like how evocative, you know, what is the individual story going to be? You know, we always say like a story arc or a character arc. Well, maybe there's an army arc. Like, okay, it started at this point where Bordurn is a trading post in the Dragon Teeth Mountains and it's, you know, guarding this Passage of Cataclysm. But what's next? Maybe the Passage of Cataclysm has a cave-in and it's no longer available. Or it goes back to, you know, what is that catastrophic thing that occurs? I guess it doesn't have to be a negative thing. It could be something positive, right? You know, maybe there's an undiscovered free dwarf camp.
Hold nearby.
King Gullok has made more enemies and pushed some of those free dwarves farther and farther away. And so now maybe they have some people up there by them. And maybe it's not a situation where they're going to be adversaries. They're going to be, you know, be partners in crime and maybe they'll be thick as mud. So for me, I always look at it as always an opportunity. The lore is there to support the army. Cause at the end of the day, the army for me has to be, I have to have an interest. Cause I mean, I don't know about you, but like putting these armies together is a lot of work. Painting the models. And
oh yeah.
I actually think I'm better at painting halflings than I am at painting tyrants right now, just because the tyrants are so big. Like if you don't do it perfectly, it goes, oh, that looks terrible. But on a halfling, the model is like maybe, I don't know. I don't even know how big it is. Maybe 3/4 of an inch tall. It is very small.
They are very small. Yeah.
This discussion has got me salivating for the future of both this army and what comes next, because the other thing that's waiting in the wings is I am paired up with Dan. We are coming back for Blue Seed Brawl next year, and you will have heard the episode, but you know, we've got some ideas and I'm very excited about those ideas. I'll take a different tack this time rather than just picking the models that I like or the units that I like. Maybe we will start with the lore. You know, Blue Seed Brawl, you kind of have to have a reason. Why would these two armies come together?
Yeah.
I know it's a simple thing, but Panathor is a lot. There is a lot of strife. There's a lot of war.
Oh, yeah.
The reality is like, why would two get together? You know, whether they're nations or kingdoms or whatever, races. What is their common aspiration? I'm super pumped about this. This has been a great discussion. You know, to kind of close this out, what are some tips you would have for people that are looking to be more creative and come up with lore for their armies? My tip is if you have a good idea or you think it's a good idea, you should DM Billy Smith, known as Billy Capgun. That guy is a fountain of creativity.
I played Billy 2 years ago at Memphis with his at the time new Riftforge Orc group. That was a great game.
Death Metal Army.
Yeah. It was a big stage and all that. Yeah, set up. It was great. It was absolutely fantastic game. Fantastic looking army.
Well, what are some tips?
My biggest one would just be ask yourself the question of who is this while you're painting there. And for me, my mind just wanders with that. It just launches, right? If I'm not thinking about it at all and something just pops in my head, you know, I just for the next hour, I'm thinking about like, and that was exactly what happened coming up with my Rordia leader background. I was sitting there painting a freaking mounted knight model. And I was just like, man, who is this guy? Like, he's pretty unimportant in my list as far as the right little 80 point combat character. He's got to be bigger than that. He's got to be somebody, you know, I just went with it. And then he ended up being the leader of my freaking army. So just start thinking about who they are while you're painting them because it takes so long to do it. You got so long to think it through. If you haven't done it yet at all, I just say give it a try. I know a lot of people, it's just not their thing, right? They're here to, I'm going to make this list that's going to win and I'm going to do it. But it's so much fun. And the other thing it does, it invests you so much more in your army. I have been sad at times in games when my Baron gets killed because I'm like, oh God, the leader of this army, the guy who got this ragtag group of people together, now he's dead. And I'm just like, I'm sitting there thinking like, how's this going to affect these units that are fighting right now? They just saw their, you know, Robin Hood-esque kind of leader go down and, in combat. And then I stop and think about the fact that I'm thinking about, you know, tiny plastic models and what they're feeling about their fellow model getting killed. It really invests you in your army a lot more, I think.
Well, the thing I didn't mention is, you know, what magical artifact is on that unit of knights, the Son of the Drunken Ram?
Helm of the Drunken Ram.
I don't need a card. It says it on the sign.
I don't know if you ever watched Shaun of the Dead, the Winchester rifle that hangs over the bar at the Winchester pub. You know, I picture that being, there's a helm above the bar at the Helm of the Drunken Ram. And that's one of the guys when they ride out to war, grabs it and puts it on as like a, you know, tradition, you know, before they ride out to battle thing.
You know, you were mentioning, as you were saying, think about it while you're painting. It's funny because I painted the army and I primarily chose this color scheme for a different army, and I just couldn't get it to work with the models. Then I applied it to these halflings, and it's primarily teal, white. The basing is mostly gray. And if you think about those three colors, really informed where it was going to be set. It's the mountains and there's the sky, right? Blue, white, and gray. Like that's yeah. what you would see. As you're painting the army, colors that you pick, the models that you pick, there's a reason why you picked it. You can include that in the story to explain it. Your artistic license on the table can be prescriptive to your army background. It's not as hard as you might think. I mean, I'm relatively creative, but I have limits. The reality is I can just ask myself a question. Why are the shields painted this way? Well, that might tell you something. Why do I have winged hussars in the list? Okay. And you know, and just ask yourself those questions. You mentioned it. Who are they and where are they from? That's a basic thing. And if you can answer that question, that starts you down the path.
For sure.
I should mention, you know, Dash 20 has a lot of great articles about people that have created really lore-orific, cool-looking armies. Obviously, mine is one of many there. So, highly recommend you go there. Is there any other sources that you would recommend for people? Panathor Wiki. So, I highly recommend you check that out. Link in the show notes. Honestly, like, I get a lot of inspiration, you know, circling back to what Bill said, the paratext. For me, it's the accoutrement of life. It's of living. Mm-hmm. It makes the world real. I love poring over maps.
Yeah, it's a huge source for me every time. I mean, I'll just, when my juices start flowing, first thing I do, go to Google, Panathor, land, or, you know, map of Panathor, pull it up, start looking around, and I'll just start thinking, oh, okay, well, where could, you know, and that was where I settled on my Abyssal Dwarf army being from the Howling Peaks, because that's kind of like the southern tip of the mountains in the north. So it made sense that my rats came from there, crossed the steppe into Rordia. Boom. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That's cool. Howling Peaks Volunteer Labor Company's the name. We're going with it. Let's go.
I don't know if we mentioned this, is be well-read in the universe. There's a lot of fiction out there. Going back to my Warhammer days, I have a Tomb King army, which is set in the Mike Lee books. So it's the army of Resetra. So as I'm reading it, I'm taking notes. Okay, this is the color scheme this army used. Oh, they have these guys called Thunder Lizards. Okay, well, that explains why if you look at my army, I've got a bunch of cold ones pulling chariots because they have Thunder Lizards in Resetra. Big shout out to Rob Berman. I'm a huge fan of the Ascent of the Goblin King, and there's some interaction with the Salamanders. And I'm like, how can I make this unit? It's different than making something unique to yourself, but, you know, making... Well, you talked about like if you were painting an army and you're putting, you know, Skullface in there, like at some point, like yeah. he's kind of a living legend at that point.
Would you have goblin models to add some dead goblins at the feet of your mighty salamanders for that?
Or a wizard that's blowing up.
We were talking about cool history for the unit themselves. As far as history on the table, that could be a cool thing. It'd be adding a dead body of a few of the different races that they have conquered on the table.
It's funny you say that with my old Tomb King army, I would add battle damage over time. And in particular, I remember adding like specific arrows. Like if I was playing Chaos and they were like, I would take some of the arrows yeah. from that army and they would be on the shields and stuff. The more I say that I don't want to evolve the army, I think that's a lie. I think deep down I do want to do it. I'm just lazy.
You just don't want to do the work. Yeah, which is exactly right. I have all these cool ideas and stuff, and I'm like, I'm not going back. I already put in the time. I already painted that. It's done.
I'm always like, what's next? What's new? I painted something new. It feels like I'm always looking to the new, and maybe I need to spend some more time just looking backwards. If you think about it, if you have an army that spans multiple years of your hobby time, what you painted first isn't going to be as... I mean, I'll give you a good example. I had a dwarf army from Warhammer that was called Clan Blazenbeard. The entire army was a bunch of gingers.
Which is exactly what I'm doing with my Abyssal Dwarves.
Ah, that's hilarious.
Oh, God.
It had a very evocative theme, and it did take best painted at Throne of Skulls a really long time ago. But, you know, at some point I realized, like, this army isn't really going to work in Kings of War. So I kept some of the best stuff, and I sold the rest of the stuff off. I love army theme. You know, it's been with me from the beginning. It's almost an extension of role-playing.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I am the general. Another great source for inspiration is the failed Kings of War role-playing game Kickstarter. They have a crap ton of content there that was created. Maps, 3D printed models, all of it's available. And so you should definitely check into that as well. You never know where you're going to find the spark.
Yeah, you'd mentioned some of their official fiction. I've listened to the audiobook for Steps to Deliverance. I am currently reading Broken Alliance, and I have Rob Berman's Ascent of the Goblin King on order right now.
Well, awesome, dude. Any final thoughts here?
Not really. I'll do one quick shout out. If you have a local hobby store that supports Manic, absolutely buy your stuff there. If not, Troll Herd Games is a website that has a ton of Mantic stuff. Chris is great to order stuff from. It's always quick. He updates me on kind of where it's at and stuff like that a lot of times. Another thing he does is he always adds stuff. So I've messaged him multiple times about, hey, so I saw this on Mantic's site. Can you get that? And he, let me call Kyle real quick. About an hour later, text me back usually. Yeah, I could be here in 2 weeks or whatever. Absolutely great place if you don't have a local hobby store. And then my last thing would just be, if you guys have army stories, post them on the Facebook post.
Absolutely. If you got your own story, add it to the post where we release this episode. Want to hear them. And if you got pictures of your army, share it. That's the magic glue that makes Kings of War awesome.
Absolutely. Also, it helps to know that other people are as crazy as I am.
Well, I'm right there with you. So, you know.
We were talking about getting other people on for this, and Rob's like, it might be hard to find other people that are crazy enough to spend this much time coming up with stories.
Maybe this is the first chapter of many.
Yeah, absolutely.
Call out to the listeners out there. If you're interested in coming in and sharing your story, by all means, reach out to me and we'll get you on. Love to have you chat. Well, that's going to do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.